stand by for action.
Gamer's Haven Special Edition.
Hello to all our listeners out there. This is Ethan with the Gamer's Haven Podcast. And this is a first in hopefully quite a few more interviews that we're going to do. This is an interview I set up and had with Monty Cook over Skype not too long ago, so please check it out. For more information on what we talk about, go to our website at gamershavenpodcast.com and visit our Amazon store to look at some of Monty's products. Thank you very much. Noble Knight Games has been serving the needs of thousands of gamers worldwide since 1997. A huge selection of over 30,000 unique products, including discounts on most in-print games of up to 50% off or more. Noble Knight Games is the place for out-of-print RPGs, board games, war games, collectible card games, miniatures, and all things game-related. They ship worldwide and will purchase or trade your titles you no longer need, new, or used. Your satisfaction is guaranteed. Just visit www.noblenight.com or visit our website for direct access to thousands of new, out-of-print, and in some cases, one-of-a-kind items. All right. Well, this is Ethan with the Gamer's Haven Podcast, and I am on the line with Monty Cook, who really needs no introduction. How are you doing today, Monty?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. It's been a busy time around here.
Yeah?
Yes, we just finished incorporating, so...
Cool.
We're all business-like, yes.
Congrats.
We just started organizing a game convention again as well, so...
Really?
Busy, 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 yes. Yeah, since the Kansas City area is a veritable black hole of really gaming events, we decided just to start one, so that's what we did.
Excellent, excellent. What's the convention called?
CantCon. For those of us who can't con, there's CantCon.
That's yeah, I like it.
So I had to miss Gen Con last year, so for the first time in 13 years, and so
that's
what we did instead. And had a great time.
Oh, that's cool. So.
Well, I've got Monty Cook here on the line, and I think let's go ahead really quick, sort of do the run through for those people who have been living under a rock or gaming under a rock, as the case may be. you of course are the household name people know for third edition to an extent.
Mm-hmm.
For third edition Dungeons and Dragons, and of course from then on you went and did some fantastic stuff with by helping out with WizKids and helping out with Paizo, and obviously now you've got DungeonAday.com.
And somewhere in there I ran my own company, Mel Havoc Press. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There was that little thing, wasn't there? But just to sort of get people up to speed, you were the writer on the Dungeons & Dragons 3rd Edition Dungeon Master's Guide, is that right?
Yes. I mean, it's a little bit fuzzier than that because, sure, you know, the three of us as a team worked on the whole system, but then right, when it came time to divide it up and who's going to actually write the words that go into each book, yeah, I got the DMG and Skip got the Monster Manual and Jonathan did the Player's right, Handbook.
So it was with Skip Williams, right?
That's right, yes.
Skip Williams, and Jonathan Tweet was the other
Absolutely.
Guy.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Excellent, excellent. And that was, now looking back, probably more than 10 years ago now, wasn't it?
Well, it was, let's see, so it came out in 2000 and we uh-huh, worked on it for about 3 years. So, yeah, we're talking, we started about 13 years ago, yeah.
It's amazing how time flies.
But, yes.
How did you get started into gaming in general? It's one thing we're always curious about is what got you into the hobby?
Oh, well, I was about 10 years old, and maybe some people would consider this ironic. I don't know, but I heard about it at Sunday school in church. And, you know, I just heard these two guys, two brothers, actually, and they were talking about what clearly was last night's game, and, you know, they were talking about a magical crown and some kind of monsters and maps on graph paper, and I didn't know what they were talking about, but I knew I had to find out. Sounded like the coolest thing ever.
So you got into it through basically through people outside of your family, then?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Excellent, excellent. Most of the people we talk to have, you know, it's older brother or my dad got me into it, that sort of thing. So that's interesting.
Well, you know, I'm old enough that probably wouldn't have been quite as likely.
Sure.
Because, you know, D&D was only about, let's see, three or four years old when I first heard about it. So,
right.
Yeah, I guess I'm old.
Wizened, you're wizened. Well, so the first thing that you really played in was D&D. Was that the first thing you ran as well?
Yes. Mm-hmm. We played the, you know, the original little white box.
Oh wow. Okay.
D&D, but when it came time for me to actually run a game, and therefore it came time for me to actually go buy a product.
Right.
my first books that I owned were first edition AD&D.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, like the first book that I owned was the first edition Dungeon Master's Guide.
Okay. Well, let's jump ahead a little bit and just give our listeners an idea of where you're coming from. Where'd you get your start in the industry and sort of work your way up to Mal Havoc, I would say.
Okay. Well, so in the late 80s. I was in college, and by that time, I had sort of migrated away from D&D in my own personal games, and was playing a game called Rollmaster, which was produced by Iron Crown Enterprises back then. And so while I was in college, it was about 1988, and to make a long story short, I sort of got hooked up with the Iron Crown guys even while I was still in college and wrote my first game product there while I was still in school. And that was a book called Creatures and Treasures 2, a book of monsters and magic items.
Mm-hmm.
And that led to more work with them. I finally went to work for them full-time in 1990 and stayed there for a few years. Worked freelance for a while, doing work for various companies as a designer, and then in 1994 I went to work for TSR, and I worked on a lot of different things. People probably know me best for Planescape at that point,
mm-hmm.
a lot of the Planescape material, not the original setting, but I mean all
right.
The follow-up stuff.
Right. Which
and
you-
then.
Which you touched back on. You touched back on the Planescape stuff not too long ago, isn't that right?
Yeah, we did. We did. With my own Mal Havoc Press, we kind of had a little reunion of a bunch of us who had worked on Planescape a lot. Colin McComb, Wolfgang Bauer, Ray Valise, and we put out a product from Mal Havoc Press called Beyond Countless Doorways.
Right.
Kind of Planescape-like. I mean, it wasn't an official Planescape product,
sure,
but
sure.
It kind of had the same mood and feel.
Sure,
but yeah,
sure.
So when, just to finish up, my when TSR was bought by Wizards of the Coast in 1997, I went to work for them, and pretty quickly after that started working on 3rd edition. And then in 2001, after the game had been out for a year, I had written some products, some follow-up products, you know, Return to the Temple of Elemental Evil and things, you know, Book of Wild Darkness, a bunch of different things.
Mm-hmm.
I left to start my own D20 company with my wife Sue called Mal Havoc Press.
Mm-hmm.
We did a bunch of stuff. The Books of Eldritch Might. We did a series of what we called event books. We did a bunch of psionic stuff written by Bruce
right.
Cordell.
Malhavik was one of the first companies to really embrace PDFs, weren't they?
We were, actually. In 2001, we put out a little tiny PDF called Book of Eldritch Might. Getting way ahead of myself.
Yeah.
Book of Eldritch Might. And, you know, at that time, there was no RPG Now. There was no drive-through RPG. Mm-hmm. I mean, nothing like that existed. There were a couple of people putting out PDF products, but nobody was really, no one really had a good way to market them and get them out there, get them in front of people. And we just, hit the right time, right place at the right time or something. Mm-hmm. And Book of Eldritch Might really took off. And I like to think it kind of led us to where, the PDF industry is now today.
Excellent, excellent. Now, other than your game writing, you've also done some fiction, right?
That's right, yeah. Over time, I've written and published two novels, a number of short stories, things like that. It's always been a real desire of mine, but, the game writing stuff has always taken up so much of my time that it's always been just a little bit here or there.
Sure. Well, while you were doing, while Malhavik Press was going strong, one of the last things that you did that some people may or may not know about, actually, let me go step back real quick to Arcana Unearthed.
Yeah.
You put out the Arcana Unearthed, what year was that?
That was 2003.
And you put out Arcana Unearthed, and it came out at Gen Con that year, if memory serves.
That's right. Right. Yep.
And could you tell our listeners what Arcana Unearthed is?
Well, my vision was, and the reason that it, and this kind of ties into why it was called Arcana Unearthed, right? Because way back when, in first edition D&D, there was a book called Unearthed Arcana. Mm-hmm. And I loved that book, not so much because because of the content, but because of the concept of that was really the first time, it seems so common now, but that was really the first time that we got a book with brand new classes and, brand new spells and, all the things that, we saw we could take the game and develop it in such interesting ways. And when that book came out way back when, what I thought I was buying when I bought it was like a variant player's handbook, mm-hmm. where it was something that, like the player's handbook, you could play with it as a standalone thing, but all the classes were different, all the spells were different, things like that. That's not exactly what it was, but all these years I've been thinking, well, wouldn't it be cool to put together something that uses essentially the same rules, but, there aren't fighters and wizards, there's something else. There aren't elves and dwarves, there's something else. Mm-hmm. And so that's what Arcana Unearthed was it's a standalone game, but it uses the same, OGL rules that, third edition D&D used, and everything, that came out at the time used, but all the races are different, all the classes, the spells, the feats, everything is similar but different.
Okay, excellent. And that game literally evolved, didn't it?
It did. It was, we thought it was going to be, it was going to make a lot of people happy. We had no idea how popular it was going to be, and it quickly became clear that the book sort of deserved an even more kind of special elaborate treatment with full color art and, mm-hmm. More text, and there were some, a lot of ideas that I wanted to incorporate. So, yeah, we put out sort of a revamped version just a couple of years later called Arcana Evolved. And, we kind of elaborated the world quite a bit more, put a storyline into it, gave even more new races and spells and classes and all kinds of stuff, yeah.
Excellent, excellent. And where I was going before all this was what a lot of people consider your magnum opus, I suppose. was Tallis.
Yeah.
The giant book for home defense.
Yeah, well, it's a big book, all right. Basically what Tallis is that it's my home campaign from about 1998 or 1989 to about 2006. It's the game that I was running, you know, on my own time while we were working on third edition. It was kind of so a lot of the things that got playtested for that game were handled in Tallis. And even after that, you know, practically everything that I did for Malhavik Press got its start in the campaign world of Tallis. And so it was a real labor of love for me to put that book together. And I'm really, really proud of it. Not just because I think the campaign setting is cool, but because Tallis is a book kind of unlike anything else in that it's not designed like a game product, but it's designed like a travel book.
Right.
We took a look at a lot of different travel books, and we learned a lot of things and got a lot of ideas for presenting material. And so, you know, I always say that it's as close as you can get to, you know, having like a hyperlinked book without having to plug it in. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, you know, every time that there's an important term, that important term is in blue, and you look over to the margin of the page and it will tell you where you need to look for more information. Mm-hmm. You know, there's multiple indexes, multiple glossaries, a wealth of information, and I like to think really, really well presented to make it really easy for a DM. Even though there's a lot of stuff there, you know, I've always been the DM's advocate, I think, and I wanted a book that was easy to use. And so much of the time, you know, when you have a ton of information, you know, you can't find, oh, you know I read that somewhere, but I can't remember where. And, you know, it's so tough to manage all the information that you have to when you're a DM. So I wanted to kind of experiment and figure out a better way to do that.
And that was a big jump from in book size also. What kind of challenges did you have basically going from your usual sort of smaller supplements that you had done, like the Book of Book of Eldritch Might, that sort of thing, into Tallis, you know, a big, big, big book?
Well, we had a number of different challenges. One of the things was that we knew that it was going to take me a really long time to write. Mm-hmm. And financially, as a company, we couldn't really afford to go for a year or something without any new products. Right. So we hired basically a full-time contractor by the name of Mike Merles, who wrote a bunch of stuff for us, including a very cool product called Iron Heroes. And so he basically filled in that gap while I was working on Tallis.
Really? Wow. And he, of course, is one of the lead guys behind 4th Edition, right?
He is, yeah. He works at Wizards of the Coast now, and is doing really cool things over there.
That's fantastic.
The other challenge that we had, just based on purely on the book size alone, was, you know, I didn't want to have a book that would fall apart in people's hands 15 minutes after they bought it. I mean, we've all had that experience, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, if you when you get into sort of the nitty gritty of publishing and printing, and you know, those kinds of things that don't have anything to do with the words, but everything to do with the production of the book, you know that it's really hard to get a big, thick book like that to hold together well. And so, but I knew it was possible because, you know, like so many other people, I went to college and I had these big textbooks, mm-hmm. and you know, I knew that you could throw a textbook across a dorm room and it wouldn't fall apart. Because I had done it. And so, you know, with a little bit of research, a little bit of work, we found a printer who could produce a book the size of Tallis but still make it sturdy. And I'm really proud of that because I know for a fact, because I've done it, you can take Tallis and you can hurl it across the room and, you know, you might hurt the wall, but you won't really hurt the book.
I mean, yeah, it is a hefty book. I think it weighed in it. weighed in at just at a couple pounds, didn't it?
Yeah, it does. If you go to Tallis.com, there's a bunch of stuff there. But you know, if you look back at some of the early articles, it talks about like things that Tallis is equivalent to, and I think it's like a six pack. you know, weighs at the same as a six pack, and you know, it weighs as much as like.
Didn't you guys have like a contest or something?
We did. It was grueling. At Gen Con the year it came out, you had to hold the book out at arm's length, by the edges, you know, by the corners, and basically anyone who could try, and the last person, you know, who held it without dropping it, you know, without putting their arms down, got it, you know, as the prize. And man, I couldn't believe the He-Man effort that went into that, because that's really hard. I couldn't have done it.
No, I have to use both hands just to pick it up to read it now. But after that, you of course delved into that. That was one of the last gaming products that you did for or have done in quite some time. You did that, and then you did. The same time came out was your World of Darkness, wasn't it?
Shortly thereafter, yeah. World of Darkness, Monte Cook's World of Darkness came out, which was a, you know, it was at the time I had decided that I was going to kind of cool off on game writing for a while because I wanted to do some other things.
Well, you'd been working on Tullus for a whole year, so.
Right. You know, you can understand. I was a little bit tired.
Yeah.
But. You know, White Wolf came to me and they said, you know, they made me sort of an offer you can't refuse. You know, they said, well, what if we let you take the World of Darkness and do whatever you wanted to with it, with a product? You know, and kind of make it like a, you know, if you're familiar with comics, you know, make it like an Elseworlds kind of, you know, book or Marvel's Ultimate line, you know, where it's all the same stuff, but it's also different. So, you know, I couldn't say no to that. So, yeah, I developed kind of a post-apocalyptic World of Darkness with vampires and werewolves and mages and stuff.
Very nice.
And that was a lot of
Then, of course, 4th edition came out, and you sort of stepped away from the gaming writing for a bit, and you did went to do some nonfiction stuff. And I think this is where we start getting into the point where people sort of don't know what you've been doing.
Right, well... So last October, a book that I wrote called The Skeptic's Guide to Conspiracies came out.
Mm-hmm.
Not at all really game-related. It's just a nonfiction book about conspiracy theories. But it's also meant to be kind of a humorous book. In fact, if you look for it in the bookstore, you might actually find it in the humor section, mm-hmm. which is kind of where I think it belongs. Because it has a really lighthearted take, you know, both from the skeptic and the believer's side. You know, it looks at, you know, JFK assassination, mm-hmm. The Freemasons, you know, Area 51, and a great number of other conspiracy theories. And so that was a lot of fun to work on. And, you know, I had already done... some of the groundwork as far as my research goes, because I had written a game with Wolfgang Bauer back in the early part of the decade called Dark Matter.
Oh, yeah. I remember that one.
And, in fact, I wrote a novel as well that supported Dark Matter. And so I had already looked into conspiracy theories a lot. And so I was able to really hit the ground running working on this book.
So what was the impetus behind that book? What really drove you to want to write that one?
You know, it's a topic that I just find really interesting.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I just like to delve into kind of the crazy things that people believe. And you know, kind of explore the fact that if you delve into topics like that, you start finding yourself believing some of them too, and
right.
And so, you know, it's really interesting, I think.
And that's the Skeptic's Guide to Conspiracies.
That's right.
And I'm looking on it. I sort of looked on, a little bit on this online. We actually got a copy of this from my brother for Christmas. So.
Oh, cool.
And it is, and this I didn't know, it's also available on the Kindle.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Is that something that you decided, or?
I didn't decide, but it was definitely something that I requested. I don't know if that's why it happened, or if the publisher was to do it anyway, or anything like that. But I felt like I really feel like ebooks, in whatever form they take, whether it's PDFs that you buy on RPG Now, or Kindle books from Amazon or whatever. Mm-hmm. I really think that is it's an important step forward. I think it's where. We're not there yet, but I think it's where books are going.
Sure, and it's just my recollection of your various things you've said, the various blog posting, is really how ebooks and PDF products are a good supplement to print publishing.
Yeah. Well, and there's a lot you can do with a book that is hard to do with an ebook, although. Kindles and iPhones and e-readers and stuff are making that not true. But regardless, there's still a lot about holding a book that I can understand why people really like. But there's a lot you can do with an e-book, that you can't do with a regular book. Just copy pasting text or adding your own notes or whatever. It's just so much more flexible. I think there's a lot of advantages. Yeah.
And are you working on any current other new nonfiction or even any other fiction books right now that you can talk about?
I am working on a novel right now. It's more done than not done, but mm-hmm. I'm not. It's not going to be done next week. and part of why it's not going to be done next week is this darn gaming bug that keeps coming back and like, dragging me back at the game writing.
It's like the mafia that way. Yeah, they kind of drag you back in.
Because about a year ago, I started a brand new project, DungeonADay.com.
Right.
And that has new content every weekday. So that's a big demand on my time as well.
How did Dungeon Today come about?
It was one of those things where I realized that it was the kind of thing that somebody ought to do it, and I didn't see anybody moving in that direction, and it was such an interesting idea that I thought, well, why don't I do it? Even though it wasn't, game writing, I, at the time, I was, trying to move in a different direction, I just had such a bug to do it, the idea is that it's you get a subscription to DungeonADay.com, and as a subscriber, every weekday you get brand new content, and that content is in the form of an encounter. And in the case of Dungeon a Day, it's not surprisingly a dungeon encounter. So essentially, what I'm doing is I'm building an entire campaign from someone, starting at first level and going on up. I'm building a campaign one encounter at a time, one day at a time. And so, the whole mega dungeon concept of it is really what, that really lends itself really well. Mm-hmm. And, it's more than just a big dungeon. Every day, on Tuesday you'll get room 233 and on Wednesday you'll get room 234. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's more than that because I'm piece by piece detailing, the town and the area around it, and there's all kinds of weird plots and things going on involved with all of that. And I also have a blog that I do on DungeonToday.com that basically it's a forum for me to talk about gaming, to talk about specifically things that I've put into Dungeon a Day and why. It's a place for me to talk about DM tips for specific encounters or just general DM tips. And so, you know, it, and the other nice thing, again, kind of going back, the, you know, way I was talking about with Talus, it's also designed to be really easy to use for a DM. You know, extensive use of hyperlinks so that, you know, every time an important character is mentioned, you can click on that and it'll take you to where that character is, or that character, you know, there's a big glossary, it'll take you to that. You know, if I say that, you know, here in room 18, the orcs in room, you know, 12 might come in here if they hear noise, there's a link to room 12 so that you can immediately go with that. You know, all the information is right there at your fingertips.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I guess I seem to be going back to this theme, but, you know, it's my way of embracing what I think is the future of information in a gaming sense. You know, in 2001, I was doing it with ebooks and PDFs, and I still think that those are great, but I think that, you know, a site like Dungeon a Day makes things even easier.
Excellent, excellent. And the Dungeon a Day, is it, just to clarify for the listeners, is it for specifically for just D&D, like 3rd edition, or what is it, what
well,
kind of
I,
resources you have on there?
I use, you know, the D20, or
the OGL.
Right, I use the OGL because that's easiest for me to use, and I think it's the game system that people know me for.
Sure.
But I also have none other than Jason Bowman himself, designer of Pathfinder, mm-hmm. Who comes onto the site once a month and talks about, you know, how to convert it to Pathfinder, which of course is really easy because, you know, they're very compatible systems. But, you know, he
right.
comes on and writes a blog post for me about, you know, oh, make these two small changes and then you can use it with Pathfinder. And, you know, I like Pathfinder a lot, so I'm really happy about that.
Yeah, I haven't had much of a chance to look at Pathfinder myself. We've been playing quite a bit of 4th edition, actually, so...
Well, and actually, so have a lot of my members of Dungeon a Day, because there's a pretty active forum there on Dungeon a Day, and one of the forums is for conversion, and so there have been a lot of people who have been converting Dungeon a Day to 4th edition, and then posting those conversions on the site. So,
You're not overly, you're not too protective there of saying, you know, no, don't mess with this stuff, you know. So.
No, in fact, one of the beauties of the dungeon model is that really the game mechanics are pretty secondary. You know, if you come to Dungeon Day, you're coming there for cool dungeon encounters. And, you know, if I say this dungeon has, you know, a pit trap, well, maybe your game's version of the pit trap works a little differently than mine, or if I say there's, you know, an owlbear in this room, well, as long as your game has stats for an owlbear, you're good to go, even if you're not gonna, you know, use the same system that I'm using. It doesn't really matter. The point is the cool ideas, I think.
Mm-hmm. And also for the benefit of our listeners here, the, how does one subscribe to DungeonToDay.com?
Well, if you just go to DungeonToDay.com, Dungeon Today, all one word, obviously, and you can go there. You can get a look at a lot of the free content. I think the first, I can't remember now, 6 or 8 encounters are all available for anyone to look at. The first few blog posts are there for everyone to look at. If you like what you see and you'd like to see a lot more, and by a lot more, I mean a lot more, cause I'm on level 7 of the dungeon now, and, I think I was just working on room 213 or something. You can go there and you can find the become a member button and sign up.
Do you have any plans to once, I mean, is there, like, going to be an end of DungeonToDay.com and then a start of the new Dungeon a Day, or is there an end?
That is a good question. And I actually don't have an answer for that yet. You know, there is an end to the dungeon that's being explored is called Dragon's Delve. And there is an end to Dragon's Delve. But after that, you know, am I going to figure out a way to continue to elaborate on Dragon's Delve? Am I going to do a new dungeon? Or am I going to take the concept and do something other than dungeons with it? I don't know. I'm discovering that it, you know, just the idea of encounter a day works really well. And, you know, it doesn't have to be a dungeon by any means. Could be any kind of campaign. Just building it slowly like that is really cool. And I'm finding that people like, you know, they like getting one really well-developed encounter a day because then they can sort of absorb it. You know, if you go out and you buy a gigantic book that is, you know, one big adventure, you know, I'll point fingers at my own self, like Return to the Temple of Elemental Evil. It's kind of hard to process all of that all at once. You know, it's a lot to take in. But, you know, if, you know, your early morning routine is after you get your cup of coffee and you sit down at your computer and you look at your email and then, oh, you go look at that day's encounter, you know, it's a fun, nice, kind of relaxing way to absorb it all. And then at the end of the week, you put those encounters together and run a game session.
Now, people who aren't subscribers, can they purchase any of the content?
Not as of yet. And I don't have any plans to do that.
It's like offer different PDFs or something like that.
Yeah. You know, I'm not going to say never. You know, I don't like to say never, but that really isn't in the plan right now. Because of the way the material, I really enjoy making the material available in the format that it's in with all the, you know, every room getting its own web page and all the hyperlinks and everything. I am in the process of making all the content into PDFs, but for right now, those are available only to members.
Okay.
And I'm only really doing that because I understand that people want, you know, once they've become a member and, you know, they feel like they own the material, they want to be able to keep it. And so it's an easy way for them to download it onto their hard drive so that they'll have it forever. But that's the way it works for now anyway.
Excellent, excellent. And that's dungeonaday.com. We'll definitely put links to that on our site for you guys.
Thanks.
And, really, there's not much else to ask you other than the question that everybody wants to know, of course, is what are you playing right now?
Well, I
what,
run...
What are you running right now?
I run two different games. Both of them are D&D 3.5, you know, third 3.5.
Right.
I use the rules that I put out in the Book of Experimental Might 1 and 2, which are basically like big books of variant house rules and stuff for 3.5.
Those are available as a PDF. Are those in print at all?
They are. Paizo collected both of the books and put them together as a hardcover. You can get that from Paizo, paizo.com, A Book of Experimental Might. I think actually the print version is called The Collected Book of Experimental Might.
Okay.
But you can get them as PDFs as well. You know, so basically if you want to see what my house rules are, that's what that's for. And that's why those books came out, is because people kept asking me the question.
Yes.
But anyway, those are the two games that I run. I run a Dungeon a Day play test, not surprisingly.
Oh, yeah.
But I also run a campaign which is set entirely in the Underdark.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that's a lot of fun.
That's interesting. All righty. Well, I want to, again, thank you for taking the time out to talk to us about what you've been up to in DungeonToDay.com and the Skeptic's Guide to Conspiracies, which is available now. You can get it. Can you get that at MontyCook.com, or do we need to check people elsewhere?
You can get it... I'm sure there's a link to Amazon on my site, but you can get it from Amazon.com.
We'll put a link to it up on our show, and you can. We have an Amazon store too, so we'll just link to it through there. And cool. DungeonAday.com. Dungeon is DungeonAday.com, obviously. So
right.
Again, thank you very much, Monty, for taking the time out to talk to me.
My pleasure. I'm happy to join you.
Definitely do appreciate it. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks.
Gamers Haven Incorporated proudly presents A Thousand Monkeys production of a Monty Cook adventure. Dungeons & Dragons 4th Edition, Night of Dissolution, a Tolus adventure featuring the Gamers Haven regulars. Available for download only at GamersHavenPodcast.com.
Again, I want to thank Monty for taking the time out to talk with me. If there is anyone out there specifically that you'd like the Gamers Haven to try to interview, please let us know by visiting our website at GamersHavenPodcast.com and dropping us an email, or drop us a voicemail at our voicemail line, which is 1-877-416-1270, or visit our forums also on our website at GamersHavenPodcast.com. So once again, thank you, Monty Cook, for the interview. And please, if you guys want to hear more, just let us know.
You've been listening to the Gamers Haven Podcast. Subscribe to the show by visiting our website at GamersHavenPodcast.com, where you can also discuss all things gaming in our forum, drop us an email, or just peruse our episode archives. You can also call us toll-free and leave a message to be played on the show by dialing 1-877-416-1270. That's toll-free, 877-416-1270. On our website, you'll also find our actual play podcasts chronicling our misadventures through all things role-playing. Enjoy what you hear? Why not support the Gamers Haven by purchasing Gamers Haven merchandise, visiting our affiliates, or just by clicking on our donate button? The Gamers Haven podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial, Share Alike 3.0 United States license, some rights reserved. Some music in this podcast is used with permission of Joe Hero Band at joehero.com. This is a Thousand Monkeys production.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.